Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about the evolution of the graphics card from the ISA to the PCI Express. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain.
Hey, Dennis, you know, I've been kind of looking at upgrading my PC, and with this chip shortage that we've got right now, I'm really having trouble wanting to spend money on a new video card. You know, I have a 2070 Super, which is a pretty great card.
Yeah.
Still, you know, there are rumors that their new cards are coming out, so it might be time to wait. I mean, NVIDIA's already said they're going to make the new cards more available. But it got me thinking what other cards I have around, and that got me thinking about your retro gaming PC thing. And I said, well, what is the oldest card I've got? And so I tried to dig around, and I just didn't have much. So I said, well, okay, what was the first video card? And so I Googled it. Uh-huh. And it turns out, Dennis, that the first video card is the GeForce 256. Was the first NVIDIA graphics card.
The first graphics card ever?
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought it was, like a voodoo card or something, but, you know, the internet is always right.
Yeah. Although in this case, I think the GeForce 256 was the first GPU.
Yeah, same diff.
No, the first video card was like a long time ago.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about like onboard and stuff from back in the day. I'm talking about the first like really dedicated card.
Well, I have a couple of cards here that are dedicated cards that are not a GeForce 256.
Oh, yeah, but isn't that like a, you know, a RAID controller or something? Oh, wait, what is this?
That is an ISA-based Cirrus Logic card. ISA 16.
That doesn't even look like a graphics card.
Well, it's got a VGA out on it.
Well, I see that, but do they use VGA for other stuff?
Well, for video, yeah.
Apparently so. Yeah.
Well, and like right here, this is a Trident card that's an ISA 16.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's pretty cool. And it's got a VGA out on it. And now I don't have anything older than that because you also had CGA graphics, which was like one of the very first ones.
Right.
And then you had monochrome graphics, which was like on the IBM.
Yeah, but that's all like on the motherboard and stuff, right? Those weren't breakout cards.
Somewhere. They were just really, really long.
So let me think about this a little bit because I've had a lot of video cards.
Yeah. So have I actually.
So these, I don't even recognize the interface on that. So maybe that's a good place to start. What am I looking at here? Let's talk about
the evolution of a video card, maybe.
You know, that might be fun, as long as we talk about some fun video cards.
Oh, yes, of course. Let's, I had mentioned CGA and EGA, and these were, you know, back in the Intel, way retro, Intel 8088 days.
See, and I had a thought those were software solutions, right? Because it was just a resolution, right?
Well, it was and it wasn't. So it still had a hardware interface, and it's just that it wasn't able to reproduce as many colors. So CGA, I think, had 4 colors, and EGA pumped it up to 8. And then we had VGA, which done 16 colors or something like that. And then you had Super VGA. And
yeah,
really,
there were some other weird ones, XVGA and whatever. I remember those from back in the day.
Yeah, well, all of that was just a progression to provide better graphics or more colors because we had, you know, like, what was it? Let's do King's Quest, for instance, right?
Right.
If you played King's Quest on an old IBM, you might get 4 colors and they were all kind of like muted pinks and blues. And it was really just one color that kind of became more than one color. But then if you played it on a Tandy, for instance, you had an actual real 4 or 6 or 8 colors or something like that. So it gave you more color depth.
So this is starting to take me back. Now, when I first started gaming, I was playing games like Empire. That might be a fun Google.
Oh.
On some early networks. But I didn't build my first PC back in those days. So what I'm looking here is, I mean, what kind of interface is this?
Well, this is the ISA interface.
All right. So tell me, what's the ISA interface? What generation is this?
It's actually pretty much the first generation. So on those old IBM computers, for instance, you had ISA slots, or basically they were the 8-bit slots. And on this video card, which I'll maybe post a picture in the show notes, but on this video card, the longer set of pins at the front of the card is the 8-bit ISA connector. And that's what was in those IBM computers, the first Tandys, the 286s, and some of the early 386s had them. Right. And then when the 486 came out, and also 386, around that generation. And this is the thing, is like you release a new processor. Well, much like now, you release a new set of chipsets and a new interface to work better with the processor platform.
Well, you know, some things have never changed, I guess, but it can't be fast, right?
No, it cannot. And what the difference here was that the ISA bus was 8 bits wide.
Yeah.
And then when you add this small little bit to the end of it, it added 16 bits. But I believe it was clocked at, what, 8.33 megahertz or something?
Wow.
So it did not move a lot of data at all.
So are we talking, this is back in the days when you'd have like, you know, 4 megs of memory in your system? Is that kind of the same era?
Yeah. If you had 4 megs of memory in your computer, you had a lot of money.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, because, you know, what was it? 640K is all you need.
Oh, good Lord.
Right. But yeah, back in the 386, 486 days, 4 megs of memory is all you really needed to run DOS and some DOS games, and also the early version of Windows or OS 2, because at that point it didn't require a lot, but the graphical interface put a huge demand on being able to reproduce those colors, which is why we went from 8 to 16 bits
right,
to add more depth and speed to increase performance.
So this was driven by early graphic interfaces on the PC. I get that. Mm-hmm. So, all right, that might be a little before my computer building days, which is nice to say. That doesn't happen very often, right? So this couldn't last long. What replaced it?
Well, everything replaced it.
But what was next?
What was next is we had the 486 comes out, and they introduced a way to directly interface with the 486 processor, and they called it the VESA Local Bus.
VESA Local Bus. So, okay, VLB. That sounds very familiar. Those are the big cards. I remember those.
Yeah, the big, super long card. But then again, it's like you go back to the early days. Those cards were that long to begin with, and then they got shorter, and all of a sudden they got long again because they added a 32-bit extension to the end of the ISA card.
Well, that's how that worked. Okay.
And at that point, they had a direct interface with the 486 processor at 40 megahertz, or it was limited to 40 megahertz. I think it was limited to 40 megahertz. The 46s, they came clocked at, what was it, 33 megahertz, 40 megahertz, and 50 megahertz.
Right, sounds right.
And then the multiplier on top of that would determine how fast they were. So you had like a 4633 was 33 megahertz bus times 1x. And then a 66 was 33 times 2.
Ah, the dawn of the multiplier.
Multipliers, the best way to overclock.
Exactly. Well, depends on the generation.
Yeah. But then one of the Intel processors got released with the 50 megahertz bus, which was supported by the 486 chipsets, but not by the VL bus extension.
Oh, whoops.
So at that point, that processor failed in the market because it was unstable with certain video card and controller card instances.
All right, I'm looking this thing up to see what it looks like. Oh, but I see there was a competitor, the IBM Microchannel.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even remember that.
I don't either, because you know how IBM tries to make money by selling hardware and say, hey, we've created this awesome interface, but you got to pay us licensing because, you know, it's ours.
Or IBM. I mean, that's how they got big. They don't do that much anymore unless you're in the server industry.
Maybe that's what the B stands for. But either way, that microchannel interface was really a competitor for the ISA bus, and it was really in some ways superior, but it never made it because of the licensing cost.
Nobody wanted to pay for it.
Yeah.
Right. So then we had the VESA Local Bus, which now that I'm looking at it, could be very long bus, right?
I think that was kind of a tag name for it because it made a really long card and a long interface on the motherboard. But that got replaced by the white slots.
Woohoo. Now, I think I remember building or at least replacing a VESA Local Bus card, but that's not really where things got interesting for me. But I know where you're going because now we're talking about PCI.
PCI.
Which is where it started to make sense to build your own PC. Well, at least for me.
At the end of the 46 generation is really when processors and video cards became powerful enough to play real games. So people had an incentive to build their own computer. Before that, it was a lot of doing your own schoolwork that way. And I think the internet had a lot to do with it as well, because that kind of came around at the same time.
Well, that makes sense to me, but PCI was with us for a very long time.
Huge amount of time in the computer world. And you could get 46 computers with a PCI bus. It was all based off of the chipset that you used. Mm-hmm. And PCI was clocked in at 33 megahertz, you know, as kind of an Intel specification, because that was the lowest common denominator at the time. And I think they raised that to 66 megahertz with like PCI 2.1 or something, some specification like that.
So I remember PCI because that was when we first started to see the dawn maybe of the boutique video card builders. That's when there was so much competition out there.
And you can't see this because, again, radio and podcast, but there's a nice pile of video cards in front of us right now. And I want to say over
here,
there somewhere.
All right.
Is a couple of...
We're talking about these guys.
Yeah.
Gotta be. Okay, so what am I looking at? They say...
The one in the
MGA.
Left...
MGA. I don't recognize that name.
Yeah, you do. That's Matrox.
Oh, well, that I do recognize.
So the card in your left hand is the Matrox Millennium.
Nice.
Which has the PCI bus at the bottom. And it's just kind of basically some card fingers. Mm-hmm. And that was... Really, the dawn of the Pentium was what made PCI really popular. And those cards enabled you to play a number of games extremely fast. Because at this time, they were still primarily DOS-based.
Dennis, we may have to talk about these again, because both these cards have really cool different ways to expand their memory. And I think this was the first time I remember that you could upgrade a video card.
Oh, yeah. Aside from just pulling it out and putting a new one in.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Because you would buy them with a base set of memory, and then you could buy the expanded module, because the card was cheap to buy without the extra memory.
Right.
And then you just buy the module and click a bit on there, and instant expandability. Although, I have, I think it's one of my VLB cards. Mm-hmm. It had these brown sockets. In the back.
Oh, so you could actually plug a chip into it.
Yeah, they were actual chips. They weren't really a module like what you get on the Matrox cards.
That's pretty crazy. I don't remember if I ever did an upgrade on one of those, but it sure would have been appealing.
Well, and adding more frame buffer memory did a couple of things, right? It sped up the game rendering because it could load more of the textures and the polygons into the fast memory so that the video processor could process the data. And it also allowed you to run higher resolutions. So if you had a really good monitor, you could go from 800 by 600 to 1024 by 768, which now seems like, that's like terrible. But back then, that was kind of the thing.
And cutting edge too. And this is where I first, like I said, started to see boutique cards. And I remember buying a lot of different cards during that time. In fact, it seemed like they were always coming out with something new. And that lasted really until, I know where you're going next, the AGP, right?
AGP. And believe it or not, in my recollection, I pulled out some of these cards for this retro stuff that I'm doing on YouTube, which I will link that down in the show notes as well. But I didn't realize that AGP was an extension of the PCI bus.
Okay. How so?
Well, And I have to go to the Wikipedia for this one, but basically what happens is that when the computer powers on, it does a scan of PCI devices. Well, one of those devices is an AGP card that sees itself as a PCI card, but then once the computer gets booted, it transfers itself into this fast AGP mode.
So AGP is more of a software solution, or at least a software-controlled solution?
For the most part, yes, but...
I did not know that.
Yeah, and since it's going over its own dedicated bus, it allows for faster transfers, which is why we have AGP 1X versus AGP 2X and AGP 3X.
So let's talk about the speed a little bit, because I had a lot of cards in this era, and I know I was spoiled that way, but it seemed like I bought a new card every time they put out a new spec.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the Apple. How did I know? Pre-Apple, right?
Pre-Apple.
Got to upgrade every generation.
Except it's at a much more concise time frame.
Okay.
So anyhow, we have on the Wikipedia, which I'll link in the show notes as well, we have the different versions. So it starts with PCI. They have a voltage listed, which is really important, but later on we find out it really didn't matter.
Right.
But PCI is clocked in at 33 megahertz with a maximum transfer rate of 133 megabits a second.
Oh, wow. Remember that.
And then PCI 2.1, which is really the majority of the PCI available once AGP hit the streets, mm-hmm. went from 33 to 66 megahertz. It supported both. So that way it would backwards compatible.
Right.
And it upped the rate to 266 megabits a second, which, you know, you double the clock speed is going to double the speed.
Makes sense.
That's standard overclocking, right? Well, now we have AGP specification 1.0 clocked in at 66 megahertz. Now, this is important because all of them are clocked at 66 megahertz.
All AGP?
Yep, all AGP. The difference here is the speed, which is a multiplier, and the voltage that it operates at. So like AGP 3.5, it claims the specification is 0.8 volts, but I know from experience that AGP 8X would support a 2X card, which requires 3.3 volts. So really, while the voltage was lower, it was backwards compatible, so it actually had the higher voltage.
So this is interesting to me because I had PCI cards. I want to say they were the MX660s, and it's my first dual set of cards. And I'm pretty sure that I purchased those on PCI. Mm-hmm. And then had to repurchase them on AGP 1.0. And I really thought they were faster. And looking at this, they were probably identical.
Yeah.
So oh, man.
I have an MX400 in the box over here, right, which was one of the first cars that had dual VGA outs on it. It supported two monitors. Mm-hmm. But it was over the PCI bus. And it came out around the 4X time frame. Right. And I think that's the right one. Oh, wait, which one's that?
Oh, it's another, it's got a data card. This is this is a Matrox 2. This is the
Mystique, I think.
Yes, it is.
So there we go. This one has a different video out on it too. It has a VGA and then it has this wide one, which I don't know what goes to.
The old style something or the other.
Something.
There's other. So many in here, but yeah. I want to keep going because I feel like that was an interesting time. Here's the diamond card. What is this?
Oh, that's my TNT 2 Ultra.
Ooh. Well, here, let's get back on topic because
okay. So, what you experienced was actually true. So, what we have is PCI cards that will become AGP cards or these chipsets which support, they're all PCI chipsets, then they're ported to AGP and then can take advantage of the multiplier. And at, AGP 3.5, 66 megahertz with 8X speed would deliver a rate of 2.133 megabits a second.
Well, I remember that there was also an AGP Pro, although I can't say that I ever had one or knew anybody that had one.
I had a motherboard that supported AGP Pro. And according to this Wikipedia page, which I really didn't know the difference, but AGP Pro was primarily workstation level graphics.
That would explain it.
And since AGP had such low power coming over the bus, and that was the only way to get power to the card unless you had a plug into it, because a lot of these AGP cards that you see here don't have power plugs.
Right.
Some of the later ones do. Well, AGP Pro allowed you to have more power. So it actually would deliver power over that bus. That's really what that was for.
Oh, yeah, as opposed to plugging it into your power supply?
Yeah.
Interesting. So those were kind of the titans of the day or something like that anyway.
Something like that. I mean, workstation graphics really kind of lost its appeal as being a workstation graphics card after the VO bus went away. Because at that time, a workstation graphics card had warm video memory so he could support higher resolutions, which was important if you were drawing pictures in CAD and stuff like that. But nowadays, you could get a Matrox Millennium or whatever with whatever memory it came with, and it could do workstation-style stuff.
So, okay, now I'm gonna take a stab here because I think I also remember the jump from AGP 3.0 to PCI Express.
Oh, yes. We talked about this in the last episode. Yep. A little anecdotal about PCI Express being awesome and stuff.
Yeah, and so I know that when I switched to PCI Express that I got a huge performance boost. At least that's what I thought. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not so sure, but lay it on me.
Well, actually, you did get a huge performance boost. However, the GPUs that came out at the time were AGP-based GPUs that got ported to PCI Express.
I guess that makes sense, right?
Yeah, I think it was the GT6600 was like first one that I got that was PCI Express, but you could buy that GPU on an AGP.
Yeah, and I had a set of 6600 GTs, BFGs. You hear me talk about those a lot because that was...
They were blue, right?
They were awesome.
I have a couple of those.
Good old PFG cards, you know.
BFG, I'm sad that they
But you
away.
Could buy those at like Best Buy. It was one of the first that you didn't have to special order or go to some weird computer place.
American made. It was awesome.
Beautiful. So how much faster were they?
Okay. So we have another Wikipedia page here because I can't remember these numbers off the top of my head.
So many numbers.
Well, the fundamental difference between PCI Express and PCI and ISA and AGP was that now we have a completely different interconnect that is divided into lanes. So
now this isn't like a North Bridge, South Bridge sort of thing, right?
No, it's not. It's more like, think of it as like a highway.
Okay.
It's really one of the best ways to think about it. So if you have a two-lane highway, you can get X amount of cars down that road without running into problems. Now, if you expand it to a four-lane highway, now we can get two sets of cars going this way and two sets of cars coming the other direction. So we've doubled our bandwidth.
Doubled the bandwidth. Still making sense?
Well, with PCI Express, it goes all the way to 16. Now, one lane of PCI Express version 1.0, which was introduced in 2003, offered 0.250 gigabits a second.
Oh, that sounds crazy slow.
Well, that is, in a sense, was it 400 megabits per second faster than AGP 3.5?
Oh, okay.
And that's just one lane.
So that's a lot faster.
Yeah. So if you get to 16 lanes, which was what was allocated for video cards at the time,
yeah,
you get 4 gigabits per second.
All right. So I feel a lot better because that was a huge performance boost.
It was. Although at the time, the processors didn't really deliver that much power. So you didn't need 16 lanes. But then again, you didn't need anything more than version 1.0.
Right.
And we have a couple of PCI Express cards. No, we only have one, which is this thing.
Oh, my good old 7800 GTX.
Which I think is, well, that's going to be one that supports version 3.0, I think.
I'll see if it
no,
says.
No, 2.0. Oh. 2.0.
Dun, dun, dun. So yeah, this is an old card. So I had a set of these also, which is where this came from, my personal collection. Now, we killed one of them, and I used the Wii very loosely.
Because it was all him.
But yeah, so these got replaced with, I don't even remember now, 8800s, I think. Oh. I'm looking to see, oh yeah, OpenGL 2.0, all these fun technologies. I don't actually see a note on it.
I'm going to assume that that's probably a PCI Express 2.0 enabled card. It could be a 1, but I'm going to guess it's a 2. Now, the difference between version 1 versus version 2 versus version 3 and now version 4, which is currently out in the market, is that we basically double our bandwidth with each progression. So with version 2.0, it goes from 0.25 gigabits a second to 0.5 gigabits a second. And then when we go to 3.0, it goes almost to 1 gigabit a second. And this is at the 1x speed. Now, if you multiply that by 16, that's what your 16x speed is.
Well, they got faster quick, of course, which is why everybody wanted PCI so bad. It still does to some extent.
Well, and when...
we're all used to it now.
Yeah, when PCI Express first got introduced, they were offering backwards compatibility. So on certain motherboards, you had two PCI Express slots. And the reason you got two is because the chipset came with 16 lanes and they divided it between the two. So your 16X slot only had 8 lanes of PCI Express bandwidth. And with the way that it works, you can split them up that way.
That's funny because the box says it requires a minimum system requirement, a PCI Express supplementary power connector or two. So this is the power draw that we were talking about. Available 16-channel PCI Express slot. But yeah, I'm looking at the numbers here. Minimum 400 watt system power supply, minimum 500 watts for SLI. Those were big numbers back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, you brought up an interesting thing there, SLI. So SLI was a technology that allowed you to link GPUs together. And it really became popular in 3DFX. So they had two PCI cards running in your system and you would send video signals to it and it would enhance and accelerate the the rendering of OpenGL and Glide applications.
Well, somewhere in the middle of that, we also added an external card that could be used for physics processing or PhysX processing, depending on the generation.
Yep. And these are all add-ons that were to supplement the video processing. So we're still actually increasing in our video demand. When it comes to games, we have the Voodoo cards, which would accelerate certain games using different interconnects. We have the PhysX cards, which would increase PhysX processing. There's a dedicated number cruncher, basically, but it worked the same way, where it sent data to that card and then out to your video, so you could actually play games much faster. Of course, now if you have a supported NVIDIA graphics card, it contains PhysX because they bought LGA and then integrated all that stuff together.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, there was a time period during that transition where you could take your old video card. So if you had, say, a 7800 and you bought an 8800, and you could make that 7800, maybe that's not even the right generation, into a PhysX card.
You could. And that was one of the defining features of NVIDIA graphics at the time. You could disable PhysX because it was at the driver level. It became a software extension to the GPU. So you could take your old card, put it into another PCI Express slot, because that's the way PCI Express works,
right?
And just say, I'm going to have this card be my dedicated PhysX processor. And that freed up your primary graphics adapter to run the game faster. It just sent the calculations that would slow it down to a different GPU.
Well, it gave you a great excuse to hold on to your old video card and get a little extra until SLI really took off.
Yeah. So SLI was a way that you could take two graphics adapters and use the processing power of both cards to accelerate your games and Windows experience.
But not just two, right?
No, it went all the way up to four at some point. And of course, ATI had their Crossfire systems. And
right.
ATI was one of the companies leading the pack of putting multiple processing units on a graphics card.
I had one of those. Great card.
Yeah, and that was even in the AGP era. They had two GPUs on there. I think that was the Rage Pro Max or something like that.
Sounds familiar.
But the idea there is that by adding more graphic processing power, you can accelerate what it is that you're wanting to do.
Yeah, of course, that doesn't seem like that's really happening much anymore.
No, not so much. Because the subsystem has gotten so fast that we don't need multiple graphics cards. Because everything has scaled up.
Well, I think that brings us kind of current to today, but on that wiki for PCI Express, I saw technologies that I don't recognize. At least right now, we're kind of stuck in the PCI Express 3 world, and they show a 4, 5, and 6.
Well, we do have PCI Express 4.0. That got introduced, what was it, 2019 at Computex with the new Threadripper 3 and the Ryzen processors.
Oh, but not Intel, right?
No, Intel
that's
just...
That's why that's not something I've used.
Yeah, Intel just recently released PCI Express 4, but it really doesn't matter because the only devices that support it are a couple of AMD video cards and some SSDs.
No, that might change.
I'm sure it will. I mean, we have specifications for PCI Express 5.0 that were introduced in 2019. And then a 6.0, which is planned in 2021. And these are like the introduction dates, not necessarily when they were adopted or will be acted upon by anybody.
Yeah, but the scale's interesting because we're doubling essentially every generation, which is pretty cool.
Well, we have, what is it, 2.5 gigatixels or gigatransfers, 5.0 gigatransfers, and then it goes to 8 gigatransfers, which is gets us back on the 8/16/32 cadence.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes 8, 16, 32, and then 64 for version 6.0. But that really got me thinking. It's like, well, if they have a 6.0 planned, right?
Yeah.
And it's not really been adopted, but there has to be a plan for what's beyond PCI Express, right?
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Although it would be nice to see these 5.0, 6.0 cards.
Well, we have, what was it, 2 years since 4.0 was introduced before it actually came to market. And then when 3.0 got introduced, we still didn't have 3.0 compatible video cards or anything for a good 3 or 4 years.
That's true.
So we have a bit of a technology adoption problem.
Some lag.
Yeah, some lag, so to speak.
So, okay, I'll bite. If we maybe moved into the future a little further, what comes next?
Well, we have a couple of things. If we go and hit on our podcast from last month, we have NVLink, which is how NVIDIA would be talking with their ARM-based processors to their graphics cards in the data center to actually create a little supercomputer that's super power efficient.
Right.
So
maybe not for gaming, though, right?
No, that would be mostly for the data center space. But NVLink is an interconnect that is super high speed and proprietary. So it's about like that EA SATA, whatever thing from way back when, the microchannel
architecture. Microchannel, yeah, we miss you, not.
But we have Gen Z.
Oh, hey, like Generation Z.
Something like
that. At least it has a catchy name.
Well, and it's a consortium of the Open Systems Interconnect. If we go and look at their website, it's basically a who's who of technology creators. We have AMD, ARM, Broadcom, Cray, Dell, EMC, Hewlett-Packard, Huawei, which is, they make monitors and stuff, Micron, Samsung, SK Hynix. So we have memory interconnects and we have computer interconnects. So we have basically everything coming together. And their Gen Z is trying to create an open-based design for all electronics to talk to each other.
Well, it'd be nice to have a common, consistent sort of platform, I guess, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm.
But if we go to the members, we basically have, I don't know, 3 pages worth of names here.
Yeah, but I'm looking for the big ones, because if it's going to make a splash in the video card world, we got to have AMD.
Well, we have AMD. They were on there.
We got to have NVIDIA.
And we have NVIDIA.
Yeah, which is probably the biggest important one. And I'm guessing that we should have Intel too, right?
Well, we have Google, we have Foxconn, we have IBM, and
no Intel.
Well, but that doesn't really surprise me, because Intel has been basically full on all in on PCI Express.
Well, and didn't they recently announce that they might start making their own video cards again?
They will. Actually, Intel has been making video cards since the dawn of time, but they were designed for basic office interaction.
Yeah, and we're talking about like the embedded GPU technology that comes with some of the processors.
Yeah, to make it less expensive for you to adopt a new PC and then put it into service.
Yeah, and if you're lucky enough to have one of those laptops, you probably aren't gaming.
No, not so much. Although they are trying to change that. And if they can, they will probably just copy something that AMD has been doing. And maybe it will be a GeForce killer, or maybe it will just be another version of the Office-enabled graphics to allow you to play Minesweeper.
Could be true. Well, I think that's all the buses I know about, past, present, and future. So it's been kind of a fun trip down memory lane. But, I guess we're out of time to talk about these video cards.
Well, we have a lot more to talk about, so maybe we'll do a part two next month.
That sounds good. Thanks for tuning in.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2021. Thanks for listening.